Dr. Tiffany McDowell. She is the Executive Director of the Institute of Social Exclusion at the Adler School of Professional Psychology. Much of her work is focused on building capacity of community residents, organizations, and other stakeholders to develop strategies that maximize the effectiveness of policy and systems change. Tiffany holds a PhD from the Ohio State University Human Development Family Sciences, an MS from the Miami University in Family and Child Studies, and a BS in Psychology from the Southern University.
Good morning. I, as you heard from Joe, I'm also a member of SOFIA, and I'll talk a little bit more about SOFIA. I'm also here representing my co-facilitator of the work group that I'll be presenting on today, Holly Avey from Human Impact Partners. She and I are the representatives from SOFIA and have been working together to move the idea of integrating mental health considerations into health impact assessments forward. And let's see, I have no relationships to disclose, but I can tell a little bit more about SOFIA because I noticed that there were several of you who are not HIA practitioners yet, but are probably thinking about it. And SOFIA was, as Joe said, designed to bring people together who are interested in becoming practitioners or who are already practitioners so that we could have more of a structure and a base for working together, collaborating, sharing resources, and getting information. So this is the website is located at the bottom, as well as the information email. If you'd like to join, please do. And a little bit more about the HIA of Americas. As Joe said, these are a two-day workshop hosted by SOFIA, and it really is not designed to train folks on how to do HIAs. It's really about creating conversations about how we do HIAs, some of the nuances about why, and just to discuss and work on the challenges that we face as we're out there doing these in our various communities and working with various stakeholders. And one of the ways that we do that is that we engage in working group sessions on these topics. So the topics may change from year to year, or they may stay the same, depending on if the working group members believe that there's a need to keep the work going over time. And most of these have actually addressed the need and next steps by producing and disseminating these work products. So as an example, Joe talked about the peer-reviewed brief that that the peer review work group has been working on for the past 18 months that they are about to publish and disseminate to folks. We've also had the minimum elements and practice standards for HIA, which if you have done HIAs, you may be familiar with as a great tool for understanding how to take on the HIA process that actually came from the HIA of the Americas as a work group product. And then also there was a great product that came out called the Guidance and Best Practices for Stakeholder Participation in HIA, and that also came from the HIA of America's work group. The equity piece that was done in collaboration with Human Impact Partners, the Adler School, Policy Link, and others came out of the HIA of Americas as well. So a lot of great tools that you all probably have accessed over the past year to 2 years have come from HIA of the Americas and from SOFIA members. So again, another plug for SOFIA and joining us. But not only that, you know, you really get a great chance to sit down and think about some of these things you may have been encountering with your own projects. You're talking to other people who get it, and so that's a great reason to come and to be a part of it. So for the mental health work group, this was particularly interesting for us at the Adler School as we started looking at how to do an HIA that was focused specifically on mental health and population level mental health. And we were not able to find anything at the time, which was in 2010 when we started this process, that really any models of HIAs that had done that. So we set out to do a rigorous investigation of mental health impacts of a public decision. And so we were able to publish our findings in 2013. So as we looked and started working with Sophia, we noticed that there were others that were interested. So as I said, working with Holly Avey, who had been throughout the course of her career and as an HIA practitioner, active stress, which we typically think of as a mental health or mental illness indicator, and stress in its predictive nature on physical health. So that was her aspect for looking at mental health. So coming together, we created this work group in 2012, to look at the challenges of incorporating and integrating mental health into HIA. We also wanted to find ways to address the challenges and then figuring out how we could work to make it easier for practitioners to look at incorporate mental health into HIA. Because we know that not everyone is a mental health professional as I am or have a research background or history as Holly did. So we wanted to make sure that we created some resources for people so that we could get more information and more HIAs that are considering this. So why? I mean, I've said it as if it's a given, and most of you have been shaking your heads, but I mean, some people may not know why. Why would you incorporate mental health into HIA? Why does this matter? Well, we know, I mean, who has said it several times that the absence of disease or infirmity is not health, right? We're thinking about health and well-being, so we need to take the totality, the physical, mental, and social well-being. David Satcher has talked about the social determinants of mental health and the impact that has on communities, especially communities that we typically think are marginalized or most vulnerable to inequities and disparities. But I think we also need to look at mental health for just its own. The fact that it's been shown to play a mediating role between certain social determinants such as exclusion, racism, and poverty, and then those physical health outcomes that you've looked at in a lot of your health impact assessments, but then also mental health or mental illness on its own is a growing is growing in its mortality and morbidity rates, and it's growing to become one of the number one factors in disease in the United States and across the world. So it's imperative that we begin to understand how we can predict the impacts on public decisions on mental illness and mental health and well-being, but then also try to prevent those things from occurring, which is why we do health impact assessment in the first place. So in order to understand what the needs are, we wanted to look at what the current state of incorporation of mental health into HIAs was. So at the time, a subcommittee led by Kim Gahulia of Human Impact Partners looked at all of the HIAs that were listed on the Health Impact Project through Pew website at that time. And at that point, there were 195 HIAs available to review. And just to cut down on the workload, because, of course, this is a volunteer organization, they first reviewed 59 full HIA reports. And we targeted the ones that were most likely to include mental health impacts. So we looked at things from criminal justice, economic policy, education, labor and employment, physical activity, and climate change. But then we also wanted to dig into some of the others with more time that would look at things like built environment, transportation, and agricultural and food sectors, because we know that those could have impacts to mental health as well. So from those 59 HIAs that were reviewed, about three quarters of them include mental health in the scope. So three quarters of them actually looked at and tried to say or make some prediction about change in mental health, and over half actually looked at the prediction and made a prediction. So where mental health may have been noted in the scope, less than that actually created some pathway where mental health was listed as one of the predicted health outcomes. Only two quantified the prediction. And then almost all the predictions were based on a literature review. So that's telling us that there wasn't a good way for people to measure, for the HIA practitioners to measure mental health, because they were only able to use lit reviews to determine the impacts. And also, along with that, most of the HIAs had 3 to 8 physical health outcomes that they considered, and they're described in some detail. But by contrast, most HIAs usually only had 1 mental health outcome, and it's often described more generally. So you talk about stress, psychological distress, mental health, or social capital, but you're not giving a specific disorder or illness like depression or depressive symptoms or anxiety. So you can see that the lack of specificity and the disparity between the physical health and predicting physical illness and physical health outcomes and mental health and mental illness outcomes, there definitely is a dearth of information that if you were a new practitioner and looking for help or models for how to measure mental health or mental illness, you wouldn't find much, or at least at that time, you wouldn't have found much. So we wanted to figure out why is that. And a couple of reasons came out. So I'll say that I am a mental health professional. So as we did our mental health impact assessment at the Adler School, we actually uncovered a lot of these things as well. And because we don't think about mental health and physical health on a population level. We're used to looking at an individual level. And one thing that's happened is that meanings or language can vary between the mental health field and the public health field. So definitions are needed for what do you call mental health? What's the difference between mental health and mental illness even? Well-being came up a lot as a question mark. What does that mean? Then lack of agreement among mental health experts that it's even possible to measure population mental health versus individual mental health and not just aggregating numbers. We also want to identify what's already been done, but then what's still needed, and look at tools for measurement and unpacking these different concepts. Because if you're not a mental health professional, a lot of people felt afraid to address it or not wanting to diagnose illness for people. So we did identify and discuss these topics, and we decided the best mechanisms to share this information with people would be to create a series of worksheets and resource sheets. And we are in the process of developing these resources that could be developed into a white paper that could be disseminated to HIA practitioners as the guidelines that they use. So these are some of the topics. We're currently in the process of finalizing our definitions and pathways topics, but then we're also looking at creating resources for assessment, because that's always the biggest question is how do you measure mental health and mental illness? Recommendations, how can you create recommendations to address mental health impacts? And then reporting, how do you translate all of this to your decision makers, but then also to your community stakeholders as well? So this is an example of the pathway, and actually as we speak we're even tweaking this, but we wanted to create a sample pathway of how mental health could be addressed in an HIA. So you start at the far left, if you're not familiar with HIA pathways, you start at the far left looking at the public decision, the policy or component or project that you're going to be assessing in your HIA, and then you move to the right. So you start with the proximal impacts, and this is not an exhaustive list, but we wanted to just give some examples of what we found from some of the model HIAs. So some positive factors or buffers or supports to positive mental health would be social connection, trust, things like sleep or physical activity, having access to green space, even having good access to good working conditions or employment, and then omega-3, 6 fatty acids, which are supplements and food related to food access that people have. Those can lead to the intermediate outcomes of behavioral and interpersonal outcomes, which I will put in a note here, could either be symptoms of well-being as well, so they could be the end result, or they could be measured as an intermediate. Civic engagement, which is more of a population level mental health outcome, and social cohesion. And then you go down to the negative factors or stressors, so things like social exclusion or discrimination, chronic stress, and lack of green space, and the impacts to then the intermediate outcomes of violence, addiction, unemployment, housing instability, which then could also lead to mental disorders or illness. So again, this is just an example of ways that the pathway could look, which again, you can see why this makes it difficult to just do a one-page resource. We wanted to create something that fully explains how this can be incorporated into your HIA. So that, I know I ran through that pretty quickly, and there's time for questions, but I want to give you a little bit of next steps. Our ongoing work is to develop these remaining documents into the white paper, as I said, but then also we've heard that people are interested in looking at not only how mental health is impacted by social determinants, but then the relationship between mental and physical health outcomes, because that has not been addressed by many HIAs as well. And then we'll begin to disseminate these resource sheets to practitioners. So here are the work group members, and then thank you. Here's my contact information. Sure. So the question was, mental health professionals are challenged with thinking about the pooling or aggregating of the mental illness and how to measure on a population level. So we worked with a team of psychologists on our HIA, our mental health impact assessment. And what we found ourselves going around and around about is that community-level mental health could also, it doesn't just mean the number of people with anxiety or the number of people with depression. As we found in a particularly challenged community in Chicago where we're at, there were so many people on our community survey that reported depressive symptoms that to me it spoke to a larger system level or community level phenomenon happening. So if I'm feeling depressed or having depressive symptoms and I'm in this room with you, that doesn't mean that you're not going to feel that too. So it's almost like it's the same thing as an infectious disease like that. So I think that's one of the things that they were not able to see because they're so used to treatment on the individual level that they weren't thinking about it on a larger level. I will say the ones that we were working with. So this isn't across the board, but as we started to work in our work group, we've heard several similar comments that people felt that they couldn't make the jump from how my individual symptoms impacted the community of people that I'm interacting with. Does that make sense? And how to measure that. So not just measuring my symptoms, but measuring the fact that my whole community is interacting with me. Exactly. So I will say the question wasn't how or should we address it. It was just how do we measure it. And I'll throw out one of the indicators that we came up with was things like community violence, collective efficacy. You know, those are indicators of if a lot of people in the community are feeling depressed or having depressive symptoms individually, that could mean that collective efficacy would be lower, or a psychological sense of community, feeling of belonging to something, is probably going to be lower too, because so many people in that community are feeling you know, having negative mental health outcomes. That's a good question. I think one of the things that we are trying to do with, at the work group level with the resources is find ways to talk about things like community violence, like lack of civic engagement, and say that. Because I think what happens is people hear mental health and they think we're not crazy, so they don't want it to be a part of the written document that you're giving to a decision maker. So that's also a part of the work that we're trying to do, is create language for stakeholders so that they can say that we're having these community issues as a result of this public decision. Does that make sense? So that it's not tied to I need to seek mental health services, or I or my family is having a challenge. That's another one of those things that across cultures and across neighborhoods, we found that a lot of people just don't want to talk about it, which I didn't. I think it's kind of underlying in one of the challenges to addressing mental health and mental illness that I didn't put in the presentation, but you hit on that. Mm-hmm. And there was one more back there. Oh, sorry. Quickly. Thank you for saying that. We're looking forward to next year so that we can have more impact and more discussion and dialogue around this. So thank you. And then I can take questions after, too.
Thank you very much.